beautiful children, we have got a zinger of an episode for you today. The Titan himself, Aubrey Marcus, drove all the way from Venice to come do a podcast with me, the DTFH. And I got to tell you, somebody who comes from the west side to the east side in the middle of the day to hang out with me, I consider that person an eternal friend who I would die for. But regardless of whether or not he took that dark transit from the west side to the east side of Los Angeles to be on my podcast, I'd die for Aubrey anyway, because he is an amazing human. And he's one of the, he's like psychic air freshener. You know, like he comes into your house and if there's any kind of darkness or stinking, malefic, sulfuric mist hanging around from your own selfish habituations, then he kind of like, for a little while, he like banishes it. And that's my favorite kind of guest. So we're going to jump right into this episode with Aubrey. But first, some quick business. My friends, I'm about to give you the name of a domain name that I found that somehow has not been purchased yet. And I don't get it. I don't know why. And usually I don't jump in to like fads or, you know, like pop culture shit. But my God, I can't believe this domain name is available. If you're listening to this and you're in front of a computer, just dive to the computer and buy this domain name. I just almost bought it. I was like, do I give that away? And the answer is yes, I'm gonna give it away. Much thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Loves, if you wanna make an amazing website, if you wanna make a website and you wanna do it fast, if you wanna make a website and you've got a lot of time and make a deep, you wanna make a deep, complex, beautiful website, then Squarespace is where you need to go. They have got everything you need to create an incredible website. They use award-winning templates that you can mix and match. They've got shopping cart functionality. If you want to start an email list and start sending out beautiful zine-like mass emails to your subscribers, you can do that with Squarespace. And one of the things that I think everybody's figuring out at this point is you don't need a website just for a business, just because you want to start a business. The internet is a canvas, and a website is something that you can paint on and do some of the coolest, weirdest kind of chaos art in the world. And so this leads me to letting you guys know about this website that I found, and it's out. It's there right now. EpsteinDidn'tKillHimself.ninja is somehow still available. Number one, I had no idea that there was a .ninja that you could pick from, but that is just sitting there right now for anybody who wants it. Anybody who wants it, you can get it right now. And if you're gonna grab it, do me a favor, use Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/Duncan. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. So that's 10% off of buying the incredible, super popular, badass URL, EpsteinDidn'tKillHimself.ninja. And if that's not the name of some kind of like psychedelic conspiracy theory, chaos magic website, I don't know what is. EpsteinDidn'tKillHimself.ninja. It's available. All you got to do is head to squarespace.com/Duncan. Give them a try. Try it out. You don't have to jump in right away. And then when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan and you'll get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. Thank you, Squarespace. Dear friends, are you interested in getting like blasted by the heart of the DTFH, the blood gurgle from the heart of the DTFH? Then head over to patreon.com/DTFH. I just uploaded October's hour-long ramble thing. I'm a little late on it, actually, but if you want to listen to me go on and on about, well, this particular one is like tuning your existence and comparisons between Enya and Hellflies and a variety of other stuff in there. I just let myself rip for an hour, so it definitely inevitably goes off the rails, but I love doing it. No guest, just me yapping. And if you're interested in that, there's tons of them sitting over there at patreon.com/DTFH. I invite you to subscribe. And finally, my dear loves, we have got some new merch that's popping up over at the shop. If you want to pick up some awesome DTFH / crow's milk related stuff for the holiday seasons, do me a favor. Go to DuncanTrussell.com and check out the shop. And as always, much thanks to those of you who continue to use our Amazon link at DuncanTrussell.com. All right, enough of my shilling. We've got a wonderful episode for you here today. Aubrey Marcus, the CEO of Onnit, that produces one of my favorite supplements on planet Earth, Alpha Brain. Aubrey Marcus is a combination mystic / poet / hardcore businessman / shaman. And he's a really, really fascinating, charismatic, brilliant human. And I love spending time with him. And this particular conversation we had literally blew the top off of my skull. So get ready, strap in, and let's take a fast train ride into the heart of the glowing metaphysical sun that is Aubrey Marcus. Welcome to the DTFH, Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey Marcus, welcome back to the
Duncan,
DTFH.
My brother.
It's been too long, man.
It has.
It's been so long, in fact, that like so much has happened to you.
Yeah.
Including something today that's
today.
Pretty wild.
Fresh.
To hear from you. Because, you know, you're like one of the most vocal polyamorous sex people out there. And it's nice. You have like a liberating take on sex that I think has inspired a lot of people, probably helped a lot of people get past some of their hangups. But today on Instagram, I read. You know what it reminds me of? I had an interesting encounter with like a drug dealer. I met him to buy some drugs. And he looked really great. Like, he seemed like he'd been exercising or something. Like, man, you look really great. What's going on? And he's like, ah, stop doing drugs. It was like one of the most like absurd moments where you're like, oh, really? So that's making you feel better, huh? All right, I'll take my drugs now. Anyway, your Instagram post is no more sex indefinitely. Celibacy is, you're going celibate. What happened? What's up?
A lot of things have contributed to that. And yes, I have been very vocal about the open relationship, but also very vocal about the repeated just kicks to the gut and the nuts and the pain and the struggle and the growth that comes from that, because the pressure creates the adaptation. But all of those moments of seeing somebody you love dearly and the natural attachments and possessions and want needs for validation that you get from that person, and watching them fall in love or sleep with somebody else and going through that and catalyzing all of that. I've shared, you know, really the ups and downs of this journey, but I do believe in a liberated, non-possessive sexuality.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that is something that I definitely believe. But I also know that I've tracked in my own life, and it goes back to this moment. I remember this moment. I'm 21. I'm at the MGM Grand, and they had a show called La Femme, which is based on the Crazy Horse burlesque show in Paris, which is like one of the best burlesque shows.
Okay.
Beautiful girls. They're all like the same body type. And it happens to be the exact body type that was like my ultimate fantasy as a 21-year-old. And I'm sipping whiskey there by myself at this show. And I'm looking at these girls and I go, I am going to do whatever the fuck it takes to be the type of guy that one of these women would want to date.
Whoa.
Like truly. And that meant every category. That meant physically, that meant mentally, that meant, you know, conversationally, that meant financially, that meant in connect, you know, with the connections I had, everything that I had. And that's been like a driving force in
Wait, was
my
this
life.
Prior to you getting like in super good shape and becoming like...
I was always in fine shape because I was a basketball player.
Gotcha.
But I was also didn't really have a a real guide star at that point. So that right. one, so then I kind of adopted that Cyrano. There's a line from Cyrano. It was like, when troubled with all of the myriad paths that I could take, I decided to be admirable at everything.
Okay, that's cool.
And so I was like, cool. fuck it. I'm just going to be as great as I can possibly be. And I think that contributed to On It, this total human optimization idea, my own spiritual growth, but always writing, you know, and there's other purposes I have. Obviously, I love sharing everything that I learn, and I love doing all the podcasts and everything that I have, which don't have a lot to do with this desire to be attractive. But with it has always been this motivation to get laid.
Yeah.
And like my whole life. And it's now gotten to the point where I've reached a level where I can comfortably say that I've found abundance in that category.
I bet.
And it's been beautiful, and I'm very, very fucking blessed, you know, like, but, and I think like the Buddha who was able to leave his palace walls because he'd had the feasts and he'd had the sex and he yeah. had all the things. And he was like, I'm not happy. I can leave the palace walls and give all that up. If I hadn't been able to reach like a level of abundance, I don't think I would have been able to go say, okay, now I'm ready to release it and see what else is there.
Right. Well, yeah, this theme of leaving the palace is one of my, I love that in Buddhism, that it starts, and whereas like Christianity starts in a manger. Mm. You could probably say, I don't know, I don't know too much about Islam, but it does start in a cave. Like these two religions start in kind of what, not what you would consider to be a glamorous environment. Buddhism starts in the palace and ends in the forest, begins in the forest. That's when he gains his awakening. But that, the deeper level of that to me is like, what's your palace?
Yeah.
What palace are you living in? And it's, and at some point, a palace is wonderful, but at some point, and I think this happened with the Buddha, you realize, oh shit, this is kind of a prison that looks yeah. like a palace. Because he had to sneak out. Yep. He didn't just make it out. He had to actually be a little tricky to get out of that place. Isn't that a great model for any addiction or any?
It is. And I think also the path to get to your palace. Like I wonder if people who haven't achieved that thing that they really want, like if I would have never been able, let's say I just wouldn't have had the courage or discipline or drive or motivation to actually be the guy that I pledged that I could be when I was sipping that whiskey. If I never was able to make it to the place where I was that guy,
right?
I don't know if I would have been ever able to leave the palace. You know, I don't know if I would have ever been able to transcend that need. I mean, I'm not giving it up forever. It's not like there's a permanent lifestyle change, but even right now, if I hadn't reached a certain level of abundance, I wouldn't have been able to give it up. And I think that's the same with money. And I think that's the same with sex. And I think that's the same with success. Like until you actually kind of get the thing that you think will make you happy, the thing you think will bring you to heaven and realize it doesn't, it's something much deeper and different that actually does.
Yeah.
Then you can't let it go.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, unless you, I think like if you have some great incarnation, you're very wise, very, very wise. Then when you hear from someone or multiple people, the classic statement, which is, I'm telling you, that is not going to make you happy. Then you can hear that and be like, oh, okay. Then I'm not going to try to achieve that
thing. Do you think so, though? Because I've never met that dude or that girl or that woman or that man.
It's rare.
It's a rare thing.
It's a rare thing to most of us. Most of us are like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No way.
Easy for you to say.
You've got it all.
Yeah.
And so then you go for it. And that's yeah. a beautiful journey. It's a beautiful thing. And you try to achieve it. And then you get it. And then that's amazing. You think for a second, oh, fuck, that guy was wrong. This is
totally
this is wonderful.
Totally. I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
And but then, we fucking did it.
And then slowly, it doesn't last. You start getting this, you know, repeating message, that repeating signal of like, oh no, this is more of a sand trap than a destination.
A very moist, lubricated sand trap.
And also, and especially with sex, here we have a sand trap with a soul.
Yes.
Here we have a sand trap with an identity, a sand trap that's in a human. It ain't a sand trap. And these are people, and these are people who feel and love. And then somewhere in there, that's where all of it begins to like show itself in a certain way, which is like, oh, if you're going to engage in this practice, which is a real path for a lot of people.
No doubt.
Then you have to really, really stop any form of dehumanization.
That's also the fuck. That's also the thing. I was just talking to, actually, oddly enough, Whitney's brother, who I was talking to about this for a while. And you grow up and you get used to this kind of, you watch porn and you jerk off and you have sex. Yeah. And sex is, you know, you pleasure the other person, but you pleasure them in a way that the pleasure itself is the goal. It's not the union that Tantra talks about, right?
Right.
The union of physicality and spirit at the same time. It's more like the mutuality of pleasure that sometimes touches something that feels divine and sometimes touches, usually a lot of times touches flow state, which is the at least removal of the stress of your mind and body. Mm. And there is some connection. So there are, don't get me wrong, there's beautiful aspects, but there are also very mechanical, pleasure-driven, druggy aspects to having sex.
Yeah.
And for me, those mechanical, pleasure-driven, druggy aspects, even the validation of pleasing somebody else, that's actually one of my favorite parts, is the mechanical process of pleasing somebody else with whatever, mouth, tongue, dick, whatever I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
Like that thing, it's not union. It's like, I can make you feel this pleasure and that makes me feel good about myself.
Right.
And I need to like a hard reset on that shit.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why there's like no porn, no masturbation, none of that for me. I gotta fucking take a hard reset because I do believe that sex is potentially a path to union with source. But I can't do it. I gotta, not right now. I gotta like hard reset and then explore and see if I'm called to that, maybe.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, someone told me Lorne Michaels on SNL said, go ahead and do drugs, but don't do the same drug all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, keep a rotation going. Because if you do the same drug all the time, you know, that's when you really do hurt yourself. And sex in particular. I think, you know, the good thing about, you know, drugs as we understand them, any drug that involves eating something, is that you know you're taking a drug.
Mm.
And a lot of people don't understand that, like, you don't have to put something in your mouth to, you don't have to absorb something into your digestive system for it to be a drug. And people get confused and think they're not doing drugs when they're doing hardcore fucking drugs.
Mm.
From the internet to sex.
All these endogenous chemical cocktails that get released. I mean, those moments when you're in some kind of deep, rich power exchange sexuality and like every part of you is lit up and they're in transient hyperfrontality and you're in flow state and there's pleasure and sex and all the endorphins being released. You're in that thing. Like, you're high as fuck.
High. Yeah.
And it required no external drugs, no exogenous chemicals at all, but you're high as fuck. And that can be addictive. But at what price? Yeah. What price are you willing to pay for that?
And you're getting also, it's, you know, like the pharmacy in your brain is always going to dispense the purest shit, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be like the high grade stuff.
Yeah.
It's as good as it can get. Anything else is an imitation of that incredible whatever that pharmacist is doing in there. When you come in with a prescription, oh, an orgasm. You ordered an orgasm. Oh, you ordered an orgy, the experience of an orgy. Here you are. And you take that wonderful, wonderful drug and you experience that transcendence. It is so powerful because it's not as though you're just getting off. It's literally like in those moments of intense pleasure, for a second, a window flies open and you look out at a landscape and you remember something and you're home for a second.
Yes.
Oh, home. Oh yeah, this place. You know, when you're like, when I've had like height of psychedelic sex, I'm not even me anymore. I'm like a river or someone going down a river and getting bowls of water or some drums in the forest or wind blowing through a forest or a meadow and the breeze rolling through it. I'm not even me. I'm just suddenly some other thing that is like the sex has been a bridge to that point.
And then all your anxiety leaves and all your stress leaves and everything goes away. And so it's not only that experience, but it's the release of everything else that you've experienced, which I've relied on that nightly. Oh, I've had a stressful day. I'm a little anxious. I got this thing. Let me find my outlet.
Yeah.
It's going to allow me to escape back to that meadow. And of course, if you smoke a little weed or do something else, it can actually enhance that experience.
Sure. But,
so then there's that meadow. There's that release of all that experience. But then, like you said, that moment of orgasm, Like, have you done 5-MeO-DMT?
Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah.
But not like you did it, man.
Yeah. So that experience of union where it feels like you're in the unicity, where there's just one note and there's not the dichotomy, there's not polarity. It's just one note of source going, oh. Yeah. And that's for me what taking 5-MeO is like. It lasts for me 5 minutes. But orgasm gives you that because the pleasure is turned up so high. That knob is just at the maximum crank where you don't hear a sound, you don't see a thing, you don't remember anything. It's just the one note. And the only thing that mimics the one note is the unicity of all things, of source itself.
Yeah.
So you get to taste it, or at least taste an approximation of it.
Yeah.
At that moment.
There. So yeah, this thing you're talking about, there's so... there in Buddhism, I know there's different... It's called the gap, is what they call it, the gap. Mm. So, or that's one of the words for it. So like, for example, when you sneeze, interestingly enough, it's similar in the micro. Because when you sneeze, yeah. You're just like in that moment, you're just fully in the sneeze. Right, yeah. The sneeze is used as an example of an orgasmic state, but like much faster with a lot less of an interesting buildup to get to that state. Usually it catches you by surprise, but still the sneeze is one of those moments. And there's a few other moments, like apparently if you start following your breath, you'll notice there's a space between breaths. There's that when you fully outflow and right before the inflow, there's a gap there. And then also in between thoughts, sometimes you just will catch yourself not thinking.
Sure.
So that's the gap. And what you're talking about is a way to get into that spot, which is in between the frames of your existence or something. It's the space in between the framing of reality. And that place is way, way, way less intense and heavy and filled with all the drama of this particular movie that we identify with, that we call our lives, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's a place. Man, you know, for me, like, I was listening to I was reading that book on Everest, man, that they made a movie out of. You know, Into Thin Air, Krakauer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This guy, he's talking about how the only place he can escape his thoughts is by climbing mountains. Right?
Like the Free Solo guy.
Yes,
right?
Like Arnold.
People are searching for their different ways to escape ourselves, which is what's really interesting. Yeah. And I think for me, building the other, because I have other techniques, I have other tools. I have so many tools, but I don't use them because I got a crutch. I got a reliable crutch that will take me every single night. You know, whether it's by myself or whether I'm with a partner, it's a crutch that will take me out of ordinary life for 30 minutes, right? And so there's that thing that I want to develop the other tools. I want to do a meditation every night. I mean, I meditate some nights, or I want to do some other practice, go out in nature, you know, like go out by my trees underneath the lights, or sit by the fire and like find some other ways, do some pranayama, like figure out some other tools to get me to that equanimity, you know, in like a different way. And I'm hoping this like forces me to use the tools that I have at my disposal, but I'm too fucking lazy and too like addicted to this other way to really use them, you know, to the capacity that they could be used.
I feel guilty telling you this technique just because it's like, I'm sorry. But you know, there is the other version of it, which is called adding wood to the fire. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Well, it's similar to the thing where your dad catches you smoking and it's like, all right, let's smoke
a whole pack.
A whole pack right now. Except it would be that with fucking.
And you think I have it?
Well, no, because I guess the idea with adding wood to the fire is that, and this is, by the way, everybody, this is controversial. And to me, the number one thing is don't kill yourself. Don't use as an excuse to go do a shit ton of drugs if you're all fucked up or to drink too much or anything. You've got to be smart. You can't just like, you have to be smart. Now, all of these are just tools to get to the same place anyway. But this idea is, if you had actually added enough wood to the fire burns out.
Well, that's also what happened. And it wasn't even that it was like this crazy. A lot of people think I've had a bunch of orgies and crazy stuff like that.
I do. I think you have orgies all the time. I think you're constantly having sex all the time.
I mean, I have a rich sex life, but it's typically just, you know, the same. I've been with six people over the last you know, 6 years.
Oh, really?
And that's, and a lot of people don't realize that, like, that's it. And occasionally some of those people have been at the same time. And occasionally there's sure. been some things like that that have happened, but it's really a lot less than people think. But what I have done is I have created these like sexually charged party environments, which the partners that I've been with really like. Right, it's like a, it's an environment where they're going to be dancing and twerking, and it's going to be this kind of sexual thing. And I usually just end up hooking up with whoever my main partner is at that place. But so much energy is wrapped into the process of creating the environments that are interesting to them, wow. and also interesting to me, because then I get to hang with them in the place that they're interested.
What do you mean environments? Like dungeons?
No, like a, like just like a. House, like a house party with music that goes late, you know. It's like, so, and this was, we had one of these on Thursday for Halloween. We go to the Halloween party, we have the after party, and then the after party there's the outfit change and everybody's dancing around, and then finally at like 5 a.m. I've drank so many fucking hard kombuchas that my head is just spinning. I'm like, I'm done. I gotta go. Like, can you, you know, you want to go up and like, can we have sex and I can go to bed?
Wow.
But I think part of I have enjoyed partying, but in that way, but I don't really anymore. I would have rather called that night at, you know, 1 o'clock and just gone up and had sex and cuddled and felt rested the next day.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also the energy that I want to cut out, is these, because it really isn't about the orgy type of thing, but it's about the party environment that like
yeah.
creates the possibility of that orgy maybe, sure. but also creates the environment that my partners like.
Man, addiction's wild, isn't it? Because like you, yeah. you look at the, like every addiction has an associated ritual, and you know, like whatever it may be, man, like there was a point when I was doing ketamine all the time. I was addicted, man. I was truly addicted. I haven't done it in a long time now, but I did have to, like, it was like too much, and mm-hmm. it was bad. Nothing was happening anymore for it. There was a time when I was getting like real downloads from the universe, and there was like an authentic, like I guess you could say, healing that was coming from it. But then it just got to be, I wasn't even feeling it anymore, and yet somehow I was still doing it. But I, you know, became addicted to the ritual. I became addicted to the whole process from beginning to end. It wasn't just the psychedelic state. Ugh, this is what's so fucked about addiction, is it's like when you're a smoker, it's not that you're just addicted to the nicotine, you're addicted to the guilt. After you smoke, ooh. You're addicted to the going to the to the store and feeling that shitty feeling of like, I can't stop. You're addicted to the whole goddamn cycle. You're even addicted to fake quitting and starting again. The whole thing becomes like, it's not just the nucleus of the addiction, whatever the substance or activity is. It's just cool to watch the whole cycle of addiction as it unfolds.
That's really fucking wise, actually, man, because there's so many other things that are wrapped into it, like the mirror glance, you know, that look at yourself, like, how do I look right now? You know, how do I appear? Or like the buying this shirt, does this look, oh, I could wear this thing. How do these shoes look? Or how does this thing look? You know, and the type of workouts that I do, which, I mean, I work out frequently, but am I always working out in the way that is best for my body? Or am I working out in the way that would look the best to these potential partners? Sure. Like, you start pulling on this string, and I just wonder how deep it goes. Like, how, when I pull this string out, like, how far into my life? Maybe I'm going to be doing a lot more yoga and a lot less kettlebells. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. But we'll find out, because this one piece is going to be removed. So everything I'm doing now is going to be for me, for my friends, for, you know, the greater good.
Right.
This is the, like, sex is the most selfish thing that I do. It's not selfish with my partner. I'm very giving to my partner, but it's the thing that it doesn't help the world in any way. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm doing something for the benefit of my company or my friends or the greater good. This is like for me and my partner too. But like, it's, what happens when I pull that out and then I realize, like, what is going to give me the greatest satisfaction?
The holidays are coming, and if you want to give somebody something that's going to transform their lives, don't buy them a copy of the Celestine Prophecies. Don't give them a shake weight or whatever you're going to give them. If you really want to change somebody's life in the most obvious yet subtle way, get them a ton of Bombas socks. Like, you can't just, for the holidays, you can't just buy someone a pair of socks. I mean, you can, it's nice. But if you give somebody a ridiculous amount of socks, enough so that they could dump their sock drawer out and replace it with all new socks, then they're gonna think about you every single day of the week, every time they pull socks on and feel the sweet, soft glory of Bombas socks. These are amazing socks. I'm a sock snob. I love brand new socks, and I love Bombas socks. They're built with extra cushioning, so no matter whether you're walking the dog, whether you're home, whatever you're doing, you're gonna be comfortable. They're also made with the softest cotton in the world, level soft. So this is like, this is the softness. Like, imagine like if, I don't know what the like genitals of angelic beings are like, but like imagine like if angels, if you could touch an angel's taint, that soft place. That's what a Bombas sock feels like. It's like you've put your whole foot against the taint of an angel. Sorry, Bombas, if I can't say that, but I mean that in the best way possible. I'm literally wearing them right now. I took my shoe off to look, and I'm wearing Bombas socks. I love them. They're fantastic, but not just because they feel great. Bombas gives a pair of socks to homeless shelters for every pair of socks they sell. And socks are one of the most requested items in homeless shelters. So if you give the gift of Bombas socks to one of your friends, you're also giving a bunch of socks to people in homeless shelters, which is awesome. And they even have a line of merino wool socks. So you get like this magical wool that isn't itchy or rough. Go check them out. They're awesome. Bombas.com. Go to bombas.com/Duncan today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's 20% off of wonderful new socks. That's bombas.com, bombas.com/Duncan. bombas.com/Duncan. Get some new socks for your lover. You know, I heard this cool thing from, I think, Vajrayana Buddhism about drinking beer or whatever. And the idea is you drink until you're not aware that you're taking sips of the beer and then stop. The moment you're no longer tasting the beer, the moment you're no longer aware of swallowing the beer, then stop. Stop. And, you know, it's interesting that is because I like it in the sense that it's not making anything taboo.
Yeah.
It's just asking more than anything for you to acknowledge the moment that you're awareness goes bye-bye.
Yeah, and when you become unconscious.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and this is the problem with a lot of these things is like you just become, you're no longer doing it with any kind of awareness. There's nothing, you might as well not be there. You're just like your heart. You're just like some autonomous, or rather, what would you say? Autonomous isn't the right word. It's like a subconscious you know,
thing. Well, you become an automaton.
An automaton. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. And then what is that? That's where now you're, it's sad because it goes from being like, you know, cargo cults, the South Pacific cargo cults. I love talking about them. You know, those cargo cults in the South Pacific, apparently they dropped these military chests that had all this shit in them for the troops. And it landed on uncontacted islands.
Yeah.
And so these uncontacted islands started doing rituals, repeating what they were doing on the day that the cargo fell out of the sky.
So that it would happen again.
Yeah. So that's chasing the dragon. And, you know, with whatever the thing is, it goes from being this truly joyous, pagan, glorious opening to the universe to turning into like a boring ass church service where you're like, here we go again. I'm doing it again. And but you, in the same way at church services, people might pretend that they're feeling the joy and they're there in the spirit of the divine, but actually they don't really feel it anymore. It's just a husk. You know, the thing is no longer alive. It's like it's like, it's not gravy anymore. It's like that crusted shit that's like used to be gravy, but now it's all gelatinous and cold and crusted, but you're pretending it's still delicious Thanksgiving gravy. That to me is when I think my gears start grinding when it comes to anything I'm hooked on.
Yeah, that keeping that awareness riding with you, so you're always, you always know what you're doing, and then you start listening to the great spiritual masters like Ram Dass, who says the soul loves everything, not every being, but everything.
Yeah,
and then you start going like, all right, like our purpose is to live in soul land. Another term that he uses, right? Yeah. Like living in soul land, where you see everything and you love everything, and you're in that place, like. The challenge is this, you ask the question, is this thing getting me closer to that or farther from that? And that's an interesting question, because I definitely want to get there. And I want to get to that place where I'm loving people who might be a sexual partner or not a sexual partner the same way. I'm loving an evening that might result in sex or not result in sex the same way. I'm loving the parts of a person's body that give me sexual pleasure or don't give me sexual, but loving them the same way. Can I massage someone's shoulders or their feet the same way that I would pay attention to their genitals, right? Like that's soul land. That's like the place that, like fuck it. Like why not go for it? Like, or, I mean, I'm down to do all the things, but do it all from that perspective of loving and appreciating everything, even the beer, even all the things.
Yeah.
It's not a path of renunciation, because renunciation just binds you to that fucking thing, even though I'm temporarily doing that as a tool to liberate myself. But if I permanently went celibate, for damn sure all I'd be thinking about was sex for the rest of my life.
True.
And there'd become a point where it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
You know,
you've just constructed another palace there, right?
Yep.
You're just building another weird. It's like, I love that perspective Ram Dass have. It's almost like he's talking about we create a hierarchy of experience.
Mm.
For some people, the hierarchy is the peak is sex. For some people, it's finishing a race. For some people, it's having children. You know, it's different for everybody. For some people, it's taking a walk.
Mm.
The more awakened a person seems to be, the less, you know, the less trouble they have to go through to get to that spot, you know? So, you know, you don't have to climb the mountain. You can just go sit in your garden, and you don't have to actually sit in your garden. You can look out at your garden. You can actually just be in your garden all the time. But people really, I think some people have a little bit of an adverse reaction to this perception, because their entire identity is based on this odd starvation cycle in between moments where they allow themselves to experience the divine and moments when they are imagining that they're not experiencing the divine. Because how could that be possible? It's like breaking the fucking simulator, man. It's like, no, you don't, if I, the whole thing can't be divine. It's got to have spaces in it. And if I don't have those to run towards, then I'm going to turn into a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's usually what people say. Then what will motivate me? What will there be anymore? What will there? And it's like, are you fucking kidding me, man? Do you remember the last time you were in love? Do you remember how you acted?
Yeah.
Do you remember how every moment was blissful and you weren't like, if anything, when you're really in love, you become the opposite of a lazy, demotivated person. You're like making mixtapes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're laughing, you're smiling. You, every room you go in, people elevate their spirits. They find a chord with your energetic state, you know, and it's just a great gift. It's the permission you can give to the world to feel like that. Like, I don't know if you've listened to East Forest tracks with Ram Dass.
Yeah, they're great.
Unbelievable. But when he says, I love my pain, I love my wheelchair. Mm. And he says it so true, like so true that you like, you go, oh shit. He's transcended the preference of not being in pain and not being in a wheelchair, and identified all sensation as being of source and being of the soul, loving awareness, as he says. Like, I think he's one of like the few people that are at least publicly out there who've really actually made it, really made it to soul land. I believe that. And I haven't spent time with him like you have, but like the more I listen to him and the more I like tune in, I think he really fucking did it.
I want to tell you one. I have a million stories about him. And yes, I would say you're right. And I, some of the stories I feel embarrassed talking about because it's like, man, I know what people are going to think. But I saw this with my own damn eyes. and we call it whatever you want to call it. But we're at one of these retreats in Hawaii, and one of the things he does on the last day is he gets in these floaty things, and he floats out into the ocean. And people swim out there with him, and they just swim with him in the ocean. It had been raining every day at this freaking retreat, man. And he was like, again, like, I'm watching this from the balcony of my room, just to put in perspective where the fuck I am. I could be out there swimming with Ram Dass. I'm like, oh, it's a little cold. Here's a man who's had a stroke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like floating in the water. It just, you know, he's being there. But it had been raining every day. He floats out there and it stops raining. And not only does it stop raining, but of course, a rainbow forms above where he's floating. Now, look, man, those kinds of things in a movie, you're like, shut the fuck up. It's cheesy almost. So there does seem to be a preponderance of synchronicities around a person who has achieved that state that you're talking about. In the same way that, and I imagine it's like, you know, if you're writing love letters to the universe, and you're not just writing love letters to one address, but to every address with every breath that you make, then I think you could expect to get some love letters back. Mm. And I think you could expect to get more love letters back than your big date night where you're humping and it's exciting, or the ketamine night, or whatever, the booking the movie night, or the you lost the 10 pounds night, or the whatever. I think you get constant return DMs. I think a lot of variables start sliding into your DMs.
No fucking
from
doubt, man. And I think Paul Selig says something like, the best way to know, to understand the self, is as part of everything in the environment that you're in. I think we have these ideas where we separate things when we confine them because it's convenient. Oh, you're Duncan there.
Yeah.
And then here's your room, Duncan in the room.
Yeah.
But like Paul Selig's like, no, it's Duncan in the room. Like, they're all part. And then not only the room, but the world and all the other people. And like everything is like co-connected actually. Yeah. And so this idea that Ram Dass is connected to in something, obviously you say clouds are one thing, Ram Dass is one thing. Maybe not. Maybe Ram Dass and clouds and the whole world and everything is actually in some kind of symphony, in some kind of synchronicity. Mm. And like that might be the actual truth. And of course, there's going to be skeptics and like prove it out, but maybe the science will prove that eventually. And but whatever. But it feels like that's right.
To me, it makes me think of something I just read in Meditations, Marcus Aurelius, where he's talking about the this idea of like, well, what is the do you think the universe is imperfect? Do you think you spring from imperfection? And you know, mostly, you know, when I'm looking at anything that isn't me, you know, especially in nature, I've never seen what I would call an imperfect tree. Like, I've seen trees in various states, but they're all beautiful, you know. Mm. The bark pattern, they're beautiful. Trees are just beautiful. And then, you know, that's most things. In fact, that's all things, is what I gathered from what he was saying, which is that any given frame of the process of unfolding of the universe can look like this or that, you know, in our own life, subjectively, in like the frame of your identity can sometimes seem crazy. And especially the smaller the frame gets, the more dramatic shit becomes. The more you forget you're a process. Yeah. You're not where you are right now. You are there right now, but that's not where you're going to stay. You know, when I started doing this exercise program, but when I went in the gym a little over a month ago, dedicated to working out as much as I could within reason. And I looked at myself and looked at my fat body and looked at my sallow face and looked at it. What I did is I looked through it and I thought, oh yeah, I'm seeing this part of the process. But I looked through it to the part of the process where I'm not like that anymore because I've consistently, you know. Anyway, both exist simultaneously outside of time. And I think that a person like Ram Dass is hanging out more in that outside of time place.
Yeah.
And he is not seeing from an imaginary place. When he says, I see your soul, he's not just making that up. That's not pretty words. He's looking at you, but he's not seeing this frame of the process. He's zoomed out
to the unborn and the undying part of the process.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. And how could you not fall in love with that?
I know.
He's seeing you, you know, and this is what they say. Again, I'm speaking for him, but I maybe not speaking for him so much, but from what I've heard of Neem Crowley Baba or what I've heard from hanging out with my baby, is they just see good. They just see beauty and good, and they're really kind of blind to the shit we're picking up on our radar. And
the judgments we have.
Yeah, yeah, which is why it's a delight to be around them.
Yeah.
Because when they're looking at you, they're seeing right into that part of yourself that you've been feeling all the time, that's given you every single bit of confidence you have in your life. And that's who they're hanging out with, is that, you know, the cloud of stuff around it. They're not dismissing it either, but they see something.
Yeah, I think it requires a couple of things. One, you have to understand that the important part of us is the unborn and the undying. And that part is our soul, and that part is here to learn. You know, and it's going, like, if you really believe that, and again, there's no way to prove that, but you can experience that and feel that, and that's what all the great spiritual teachers say. Like, know that. And then recognize, like, memento mori, the classic Stoic saying, remember that you're going to die.
Yes.
Like, remember that this body is just in transition, to give you a framework to just enjoy it and know that you're in a constant transition. And so you're not Duncan, you're Duncaning. I'm not Aubrey, I'm Aubrey-ing. There is no noun, it's all a verb.
Yes.
Because everything is actually, even something that looks like it's never going anywhere. In 1,000 years, that chair, it's chairing its way into complete decomposition.
That's right.
In some way. Everything is just in a process as we go. And we get to surf that process as we go. And we have a little agency to steer the surfboard or the canoe or whatever and decide, do I want to be Duncaning in shape or do I want to be Duncaning out of shape? You know, like whatever you want to be. And you can make those choices.
Yeah.
And know that, like, okay, here's this life, this experience I have to be a Duncan or to be an Aubrey.
Yeah.
How do I want to do it?
Yeah.
You know, and recognize that either way, it's all good. You know, you can't make a wrong choice as long as you're not hurting somebody else, preventing somebody else like Chad from chatting or Karen from Karening. You know, you got to let them fucking chat or Karen the way that they want to chat or Karen.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't fuck with their shit.
Yeah.
But other than that, do what you want.
And you gotta let Aubrey.
Yeah.
And not fuck with Aubrey's shit. And the next, you know what I mean? And like and that's, to me, is where it gets really controversial, and perhaps I've misunderstood. But once Krishnadas said this thing to me, and I'm sorry, Krishnadas, not that you're listening to this, but maybe I misunderstood you, but he always says the heaviest shit to me, but it's always like one sentence. But then I think about it for 4 years, you know? And I remember he put his hand on my shoulder at this live podcast, at this podcast we were going to do right before we went on stage, and he looked at me. You know, these guys, they really are just loving people, man. And when someone's, there's a thing they say about one of these Tibetan teachers, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. He could say to you, be kind. Mm-hmm. But because it was coming out of an awakened being, someone who was opened up, it's a way different be kind than when you hear it on a TV commercial on the back of a cereal box or whatever.
Yeah.
But he put he said, you know, you're going to have to burn off all the karma, right? Every bit of it. And it was so cool because it was so simultaneously compassionate and realistic, being like, you can't skip ahead to that place. You're gonna have to burn it out. It's gonna have to like be processed, and you're just gonna have to do it. And that surrender to that process, that to me is what Ram Dass really teaches, is to, okay, then I'm gonna love the burning. I'm gonna love every bit of it. When my awareness is there, when I'm there, not completely asleep or freaking out or screaming, when I'm there, wait, I think I can work with this. I can really love this? And then somewhere in there, that's, to me, I don't know, those moments are pretty sweet.
That's what alchemizes the karma itself. I mean, Ram Dass says, I really like the way he talks about karma, because a lot of times people get so wrapped up in this past life and you did this thing 7 lifetimes ago. And he goes straight up, your karma is your mind.
Whoa.
Your karma is your mind.
That's so good.
Right? So then you recognize, like, okay, I'm not trying to redeem some fucking random mystery about some thing I did in some lifetime in some fucking star system that was far away or whatever some Akashic Records reader is going to try and peddle you. But, like, you're just working with the things that are in your mind.
Right.
Every time that you're in judgment, every time that you have a love that holds a record of wrong rather than the love that holds no record of wrong.
Whoa.
Every time you even need to ask for forgiveness, because if you're asking for forgiveness, that means you've already judged somebody, but true love doesn't judge, so it doesn't ever need forgiveness because forgiveness is already always given. Wow. And you're in that spot.
Yeah.
You've transcended the karma of the mind.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
so you like you get a clear focus. Like, okay.
I love that, man. It's like forgiveness in particular. There's this concept of revision. Have you heard this concept before, revision?
No.
Neville Goddard is this brilliant philosopher, talks about it. And I think I've heard of like some group therapy stuff that uses this, but essentially, you know, many of us are haunted by some memories of times we weren't our best selves with people. And so those memories will just pop up out of the blue. And for a lot of people, when the memory pops up, it triggers a guilt reaction, which triggers usually some kind of depression or a series of behaviors that tend to like actually amplify the conditions that the sort of less perfect self was being reactionary in the first mm-hmm. place. So you keep repeating this, you get stuck, and this is when people are like, oh fuck, man, the same thing keeps happening to me over and over again. I don't get it. Why? Well, it's because you're stuck in a memory. And so revision is this practice of like, and it's really weird when you hear it at first, but the next time the memory comes, instead of like reacting with guilt, react by revising the memory itself as though you were your best self in that moment, and say the things to the person that you would say from a loving, awakened state, and actually let them be their best self too, and hear them say the best thing back to you. And just as a psychological practice of, because when you realize like, oh shit, much like Marcus Aurelius says, everything before this moment is gone, at least from my temporal based POV, meaning that the past is gone except for the remnants of the past that are floating around in the snow globe of my brain. So if I take those remnants of the past and actually transform them from their degraded state to the highest state that I can imagine for them, you get a weird instantaneous what is called a remission of sin. You get an actual, you have revised, and you have like in that moment, suddenly, weirdly, you'll perk up before your mind can kick in and be like, shut the fuck up. What are you, delusional? You can't change the past. Well, the past is gone, but I certainly can change my record of the past.
No doubt.
And in that is what I've been, someone was Neville Goddard, that's forgiveness. That's truly forgiving yourself, is revising. And if, then from a multiverse perspective, it gets even wilder. This concept of every single possibility is happening at once. And the act of revision is actually a navigation into the part of the multiverse where you were your best self as you're being drawn into your best self. And then it gets even trippier, which is to imagine that right now, at some point in the multiverse, an advanced version of ourself is revising the past right now. And we're experiencing that revision from the awakened version of ourselves. And then, of course, when you get to the point we're talking about unit of consciousness, you realize that that self, of course, is the mind of God.
Wow.
Yeah, and this entire experience is a revision that it is increasingly perfecting
and
itself.
It all takes its own time and its own pace.
That's right.
But that theory, that thing, I've actually seen that in practice. So I have a group, I have a mastermind, we call it Fit for Service. And we were out in Sedona. That was the last time we were in a retreat. And the purpose of this quarter was about emotional fitness. And so we started a workshop and I shared a lot of personal things that I was guilty about, the things I was most shameful about in my life. And a lot of these things, so many of these people had these same things that they were shameful about. And then we did this exercise where we looked at each other and tried to see that everybody was each other living a different life. Like, look at those eyes, think of the things those eyes have seen, think of the things, the tears that those eyes have cried, the smiles that face has formed, the lines on the cheek, the furrows on the brow. Like, let's look at each other, see this. So we got to this state, and then people had the opportunity to offer those things that they were shameful about. And I was really surprised. I was kind of expecting, one time I cheated on this exam or one time I did this. But there was some really powerful stuff that came out. And I was sharing, as much as I could to kind of open the door. But, one guy in particular was like, and he was with his wife. He's like, I beat my kids. And he starts crying and his wife starts crying. And then everybody starts crying. But everybody in that moment offered him their best version of unconditional love, even though every person in the room was so moved by this. And then so just intuitively, the exercise was like, all right, thank you for sharing that. Now all of us, let's beam back to you the most unconditional love and forgiveness that comes from the divine. And some people had a problem with that. Some people were like, no, like, you can't, I'm not, I don't want to, I don't, I can't forgive you. I can't forgive him for that. We're like, we're accessing like a forgiveness that's beyond the human here. And this will create the change that will actually prevent the action from happening. Like, we're so stuck in this crime and punishment action. Like, oh, well, we should beat you now,
yeah.
But what really ended up happening is everybody got to that state where they were like, everybody was looking at him and just beaming that love. And it was such a powerful transformative experience, not only for him, but for everybody, to know that even that thing that is so kind of almost unforgivable can be forgiven and transcended. And all of that guilt and all of that shame and all of that, that when it's compounded will bury, different elements of his life, and all that can be revised in the language that you're using.
And one of the things Trudy Goodman says that I love is you don't have to do it alone.
That's what community is there for. That's why it's so fucking powerful.
Yeah.
So it's because when we had like 25 people all doing that, their heart already peeled open. They're already in, wide open from the whole experience of the weekend. But when they were all there beaming their love and he was looking around and saw nothing but love back to him in the room, like, holy shit. That was a thing.
You watched a transfiguration happen, probably.
Yeah.
When, what's that saying in Christianity? Where three or more of you are gathered, there I will be. And like that Christ consciousness. And to me, this is, I think, where people get really confused about Christianity. It's because their experience with it sometimes is hyper-judgmental people who seem to have a real intense agenda, to get you on their track. But like the real idea of it being like this, like, no, you don't. The thing is, it just loves you. It loves you when you're killing it. It loves you when you're hurting it. It loves you when you're whipping it. It loves you when you're loving it. It loves you unconditionally. Mm-hmm. It loves you. It like loves you the way my son looks at me, loves you.
Yeah.
Except it's the whole universe. And to me, that is the, like, when you look at what's happening on the planet, and you realize you're seeing, like, what is it? If this isn't the crucifixion of Christ, I don't know what is. You're seeing this, like, beautiful, beautiful, purely innocent, all-giving thing slowly being whipped, its clothes ripped off, nailed to a fucking industrial revolution model of existence, and slowly dying while it writhes in space completely alone as we devour it. If that's not Jesus, I don't know what is. And the good news about it is that, like, at least if it follows the same model, there's a resurrection potential there. Almost like in that story, at least there needed to be that, didn't there?
Yeah, man, that was a powerful way to describe it, because it's so true, man. I mean, that's God out there. That's God out there that we're doing all of these things to without any consciousness. We're not like the beer sipping example, right? Like, we're not cutting the trees by asking the trees if we can cut them. We're not talking to the earth when we go dig for gold or oil, or we're not talking to the air when we spew shit into it. We're not talking and being conscious of the ocean when we dump shit into it. We're just taking mindless automatons going and crucifying our mother, and in some ways our, if Father is spirit and Mother is earth, it's like Jesus as our mother.
Yeah.
And like crucifying our mother. And But there is that thing that maybe that is exactly what needs to happen for us to really appreciate, you know, our mother, just the way that Jesus needed to be crucified for us to really appreciate him in a certain way. Like, that's what propelled Christianity into the global phenomenon. And of course, it's been bastardized, like Selig says, you know, diamonds of truth poured in a mortar of distortion. And that mortar of distortion has been all the ways that people have used power to kind of manipulate Christianity. But the diamonds of truth are still there. And those diamonds of truth is the truth of Jesus that was being crucified. But nonetheless, maybe it's all happening fucking perfectly. Yeah. As fucking sad as it is, when you watch those nails go through the hands, as we watch our oceans get destroyed and we watch these animals go extinct, those are the nails through the hands and the crown of thorns on the head. And as hard as that is for us who are aware to see it, maybe we can have the faith to know that it's the only way it ever could be.
And also just like, you know, the cataclysmic heartbreak of the when that thing dies, you know, and like, to me, that's
fuck.
Yeah, the heart, the like unparalleled heartbreak. But that heartbreak is happening, you know, that's important. I just think that's important to feel and to like, as I've heard, to radiate out from that heartbreak. So the heartbreak comes because, you know, I meet people and they're scared and they're like, the world's ending and everything. And it's like, yeah, but to really honor it, feel your heartbreak.
Yeah.
And then radiate out from that and then let out break again and again. And I don't do that, but I mean, when I do it more lately, thank God. But like, it is, you have to get into your heart and feel it. And then, but then also remember, if as above, so below, we're, forget crucifying the earth, we're fucking crucifying ourselves.
Yeah.
Every single day. You know,
I'm an expert at that. Self-crucification expert. But again, that's that.
You are an expert on that. You're hard on yourself, man.
I am hard on myself. It's true, Duncan. But you know, having somebody else, like I know that I love the earth, but I haven't felt what I just felt just now until you just used your words and your language and your own expression and your own way of talking about it. And like, it just reminds you. And that's why it's so important to like be around people who can remind you and show you and like say like, hey, remember the earth. Remember how like, remember that for a second.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fuck, I haven't really been thinking about that at all. And then you can feel the heartbreak of that. You don't have to carry it with you every second of every day. You got stuff that you can always focus on, but to tap back in and to feel that and feel the love for your parents before they pass.
Yeah.
You know, like you take that shit for granted. I love my mom so much, but I see her every couple weeks and I'm like, come on, man. Like, see her more.
Yeah.
Like, I love her so much. Yeah. You know, like, go make that extra effort, but you take shit for granted. Oh, mom, you know, she's gonna be around, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Like, yeah. Don Howard, you know, like the last time I said goodbye to him, I thought maybe this will be the last time. I was like, I'll probably see him again. He's getting treatment at the Mayo Clinic. I think he'll make it another couple years. And then you just get that message and like, fuck, I should have just gone to fucking Arizona. You know, like I could have. And just seen him one more time. Just like, held his hand in the wheelchair just one more time.
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, the closer you get to that desire you expressed earlier, which is to no longer hierarchize experience, the sooner you'll see him again. And yeah, that's the fascinating, I think, one of the fascinating things about this stuff is that it is a veil of sorts, and that the more you just melt into it, the more all those people that have been covered up by the veil of time, suddenly you start seeing them. And man, it reminds me, Neem Karoli Baba, this is, you know, one of the things they talk about is how wild it was that he mostly just talked about Jesus. He talked about Jesus, they said, almost more than Hinduism, more, I think. And there's a story they talk about, which is where like, he started crying. He was talking about Jesus and he starts crying. Like, just like, you know, and when a being like that starts, that the vibes, apparently, just the energy, he's like crying.
Yeah, everybody's crying.
And he's like, he said, he lost himself in love. He lost himself in love. And it's like such a wild thing to say, is to become lost in this thing that you're talking about. This, it's not, it no longer goes to being like, well, I think I can be in love with the UPS driver, and I think I can be in love with the traffic, and I am so deeply in love with this experience of incarnation that there's no more me. If I wanted to go back, I couldn't. There's nothing to go back to. Whoa! That's a potential, I think, that some of these people demonstrate to us in their teachings.
And I think there's been a sporadic few, but I think as time goes, it's just like that first person who hits that double backflip on the motorbike in X Games, like as a few more people get a little closer. And it's like, we start now, Ram Dass has a lot of light shining on him, right? Like, yeah, a lot of people are getting to see that, and they're going like, oh shit, there's some shit that's possible. These aren't people that are, you have to walk on foot to India to find them and then hear the story and go back. Like, we got them on video and recordings, and we're, people can see him and go to retreats with him. And then there's going to be more of these people popping up, and we have the invitation to be on some part of the bridge to that road and give people anywhere on that bridge a little more permission to be like that.
Yeah.
And then the world can start to really fucking shift.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where it gets really exciting. Like, how much, how close can we get in our lifetime to that place of being in love with everything, not every being, but everything?
You tell me.
I don't know, man. I'm going for it, though. Why not? And that's and that's it. Like, why not fucking go for it? I don't know. I got a lot of shit in the way. You know, like,
what's in the way? Isn't the idea you love the shit too? Like, yeah, whatever's in the way, you start loving it. You realize it's like, oh yeah, it's like a weird form of procrastination. It's like, hey, I'm gonna sit in this fucking hot tub of like dark goop, you know what I mean, and not go with the nice hot tub. Because that was one thing in the early days with Ram Dass, he'd always be like, you know, we need to get you out of your head into your heart to me. And I'd be like, it's too hard. And he'd get this big smile on his face and go, no, it's not. Like, I want to make it hard.
Yeah.
I want to make it like some kind of like ultra marathon. I want to make it like a gnarly journey through fucking thorns, because what does that do? It makes it so that for whatever reason I could continue my addiction to confused state.
It allows the ego to maintain sovereignty over the being.
That's it.
It allows, because if you're struggling and you're striving, you're in a place that isn't quite there, and you have to figure it out and think your way through, and then the ego is in control. And I think that's, I think, the slippery ways that we're kind of, when I talk to Paul Selig, and I know I mentioned him a bunch, and some people may agree with him or not, but he has such wisdom. When I talked to him, and I asked him if the ego itself could be considered a being, like a being. And he was like, he asked the guides, and he was like, yes, the ego, you could consider the ego as a being. So what that means to me is that every being has the imperative to survive.
Right.
At all costs, like the every being wants to survive. That's the primary imperative. Procreate is another part, but yes, primary imperative is to survive. So your ego is within you, within the construct of your mind. You can consider it like a being, and it wants to survive. Now, if you open your heart and you transcend the vision in which you see separation in all, you know, you don't see the separation in everything anymore. The ego is no longer in sovereignty, and it's almost a place where the ego dies. Yeah. So it's going to fight to the bitter end to take over and keep control, because it, as a being, it wants to survive and thrive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's like the living palace. It's like, it's not just a palace. Yeah. It's a palace that walks around and wants to, like, yeah, yeah. And it's such a funny, it's like, what would be, like, how much would it be worth to completely experience the fundamental goodness of all things all the time? Like, how, what would the, what's the ticket price for that? And I think the ticket price is just, is like everything.
Yeah.
Like, just, you just, well, you just would give it all up. That's all. Just give everything up. Like, I, with my son, Like there is no question that I would just if I needed to die for him, I would do. I wouldn't even think about it. Like, yeah, no problem. That's love. Like I love him that much. I'll die. It's not even that big a deal because I love that being so much. And so this gives me a little bit of a as above, so below map within which to understand, okay, well, if I could expand that out. So it wasn't just my son, but it was everyone. Not just my wife, my son, my dogs, everything. And constant love. Even when they're fucking screaming in my face.
Sure.
Even when they're shitting on me.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Whatever it may be. Because I think that is the other piece for me, at least. It's like, God damn it. I love winning. I love the arm wrestling match and I'm right. The righteousness.
Of all things, the ego loves winning the most. Yeah. That's what it's driven to. It's driven to win. It's driven to claim separation, claim separateness and win. But it first has to claim separateness before you can win. How do you win if you're same? You can't fucking win if you're same.
Right.
So it claims separateness and then competes forever to try and win.
That's crazy.
And so the answer, I don't think we'll ever be able to let it go completely, but if we can merge the soul and keep the soul in the sovereign position and the soul becomes like the rider and the ego becomes like the horse and it moves you. And then all of a sudden the horse and rider become like a centaur in which the whole mind and essence of the being is actually driving the horse. The horse doesn't even have its own mind anymore, but it's still there, soul and ego on this journey through life. And it's just the unification.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the place I think a lot of people check out. It's like, no, I'm going to stay a me. That's at least what I... You know, but at least, though, I think what's cool about this stuff is that it is very compassionate in the sense that it's, you know, all these teachers, you always get the sense from them. There's this sense of like, no, this is... You should get on the boat. I mean, it would be good for you to get on the boat. It would be good for you, but there's no rush. And Ram Dass talks about it with Neem Karoli Baba, that sense of like, he's looking at you and it's not like he's thinking, oh, you could do a few more lifetimes. You want to do 100 more? Maybe 1,000? Do them. Let's do some more. We will do as many as we need to. On and on and on. So that again, is another, like what you just said about the idea that the ego must create these boundaries to produce a situation of winning and losing. Similarly, another trick of the ego is this thing. Okay, then I'm going to lose myself in love by next week. I'll be lost completely in love.
And win that way.
Yeah, I'm going to win the love.
I'm going to win the ego loss game, right? Like, I mean, and I think it may actually even be productive to guide the ego towards unconditional love. Because again, I don't think we can let it go. I think we just got to steer it, especially at first. Like, we got to steer it. So what are we going to steer it to? Well, we can steer it towards money and sex and power and all of these things. But if we actually steered it towards unconditional love, not the spiritual materialism of wearing your power amulet and saying that I'm the spiritual being and I'm better because I'm a spiritual being, but actual unconditional love, which sees every person as just the same, not better or worse. And that was what you like steer your ego towards.
So
like,
what's
come
the,
on, ego.
How do you do the steering?
You go... Ego, the coolest thing that you could fucking do, the baddest thing to make you the fucking best, the best thing you could do is to love everybody unconditionally.
That might
see
work.
See everybody is same.
May you I know? Propose another one?
Yeah, go for it.
How about this one? You look at the ego, and this is almost blasphemous for a lot of people, and you go, ego, I love you.
Yeah.
Just the way you are. I love you. I love you. I love you right now. You don't need to do a damn thing.
Totally.
Because you know what, man? I know this, and this is my ego speaking. Anytime anybody is trying to steer me, I'm like, fuck you. You will not steer me. I'm going to be this way. But anytime you get around someone... Who's like, I love you.
I love you.
You get pissed. You do the thing where you're like, motherfucker, I'm going to fight. And then after the fucking, they're looking at you and they actually love you after that thing. And you're like, wait, all my other friends, when they see that side of me, that's pretty much it. Like, there's a permanent limp in our relationship. But you just saw that. nothing's changed. You still love him. Well, what about that? And you do go through all these gesticulations in the face of that kind of love in the same way my baby will just scream and noodle around and like, ah, but then I love that. And he's going to be fine. And he's not expecting me to remember the tantrum. And I certainly don't remember the tantrum. Mm. It's unconditional is what I'm saying. And that to me is like, okay, if we're going to practice this shit, we're going to start with the ego. And we're not going to start by steering the ego, by changing the ego, by remodeling the ego. What happens if we actually just love it now? What happens to the pattern? Does the pattern change? Does it?
It might end up with that. Might be actually the way to do the same thing that I was mentioning in the most effective way.
Maybe
is to love it unconditionally, and then it will learn to love everything unconditionally from the love that you've patterned and shown it to love. And that may be actually the way. So maybe your question of like, how do you get the ego on board? Maybe it's to love it just the way it is, no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, I told this story. I saw a picture one time of, and actually Alex Gray like redrew the picture for me, which was fucking rad. But it was a picture of Prometheus who's chained to the rock.
Yeah.
And I think I might have told this story maybe.
No, I know the picture. The vulture's eating him.
Yeah,
and
the
shit.
Eagle.
Yeah.
Eagle is eating its liver out, right? Well, in this one, Prometheus is chained in a way that his feet are bound, but he still has access to his hands. And so Prometheus is eating his liver and has his liver, is pulling it out. The eagle is pulling out his liver, and Prometheus is giving the eagle a hug. And every single, the symbol being that every single day the eagle does that, eagle just doing its duty, its dharma, which is to eat the liver.
Yeah.
And Prometheus making the choice, like Viktor Frankl said, the ability to choose our reaction to any given situation, not the situation. Prometheus is choosing to hug the eagle in that moment. That's unconditional love.
Aubrey, I love our conversations.
I love our conversations too, man.
We can't do better than that.
Yep.
We're going to wrap it up. My God, beautiful. That's beautiful. Love the ego that's eating your guts. Mm-hmm. Love the eagle. Did I say ego? Shit.
Yeah, wow.
Whoa. Where can people find you, my friend?
At Aubrey Marcus is a good place to look. On it is where, if you're interested in supplements and fitness stuff.
Alpha and, Brain is the best.
Aubrey Marcus podcast too. I have a bunch of cool conversations on that.
You sure do, man. And
thanks, brother.
Every time I get to hang out with you, my life gets better.
Likewise.
Thank you for coming here from Venice. That is a gift beyond gifts, which I hope to repay somehow.
It's already
day.
Been repaid, my man.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Yeah.
Much thanks to Aubrey for appearing on the DTFH. I'll give you all the links you need to find Aubrey over at duncantrussell.com. And thank you to Bombas, and thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. The number one way to support this podcast is to try out our wonderful sponsors who are taking the leap into sponsoring the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. So reward their heroism. Try out some new socks. Get yourself a new website. And I will see you next week with a fantastic interview with Andrew Santino. Until then, Hare Krishna.